We're holding on Ayin Dalet Omer Aleph, top line. We were talking about some dinim of Mekach or Memkar, not specifically related to Ribis by a digression from talking about certain cases that of Mekach or Memkar that may involve that may or do involve Ribis. The Gemara says, Omer Rava, how many Beit Chlosa do you have Izuzil Chad L'Mizban L'Humid? If three people give money to one person to buy something for them, so the three of them put the three of them gave him money, and they told him they want him to buy something which they're gonna be partners in. Now he bought something, he bought some merchandise, intending it for only one of them. The din is zovan lechulhu. It's considered that he bought it on behalf of all of them. And therefore, all of them are so each of them is entitled to their share of it, and then afterwards they'll work out how it works out money wise. The loyam moran, however, that only applies elo delight sar v'chosin inish l'chodei, only if the shliach did not bundle up each one's money separately. So therefore, so in other words, all the money was mixed together. So now, when he bought, we can assume that he was buying with money that that belong that was part of the pool that belonged to all three of them. Avot sar v'chosim inish l'chodei. But if each one's money is bundled individually, l'man, then it's different. Whichever one's bundle he used, l'man de zovan zovan. Then whoever's bundle of money he used, it's considered that he bought for that person. L'man de loy zovan, and the one he didn't buy it for is not in fact the partner in it because he didn't actually use his money. So in that case, then we would say that only the one, so that only some of them are the owners of it. Actually, that so that's how Rashi learns and the Rambam learns the same way. The Ritva actually learns, the Ritva brings from the Ramban actually that it's not so much whether it's bundled separately, it's whether when they gave him all the money at one time and they weren't machped, you make sure that you keep this money is mine, this money is mine, because you're gonna put it all in one pool, then it means that then it means they become by then it means they become partners. Only if he says Beferish that he's buying for only one of them. So now so only if he himself went and bundled each one separately, or if they gave him the money, each one in their own in their each one individually, then it shows they don't want to be partners. So then so there are gonna be cases in short where all of them are considered partners in it, and there's gonna be cases where not, depending whether he used whether the money was pooled together in the first place or not. An interesting thing comes up nowadays when money transfers are generally done electronically, so you don't really have this whole concept of sayer v'chosim. Each one of them is giving him money and it all goes into his bank account and then he pays out of that. And that's more like the case over here of it's not sayer v'chosim, it's not inish l'chodei. They're all pooled together, and therefore there's much more of a reason to say that in fact it would go to all of them and each one of them would have their share in it, because it's really not possible to have it be individually per person. Okay, another din in Hilchos Mekach Memkar. Here's another point. A situmta creates a kinyan. Now, what is a situmta? Rashi explains it means when it comes to, for example, barrels of wine. So a person buys a whole bunch of barrels, but he doesn't take them right away. He leaves them in the moicher's possession, but the moicher marks which ones are his, and then over time he takes them out. He takes the ones that are marked on his behalf, and he takes those. So situmta then would be the markings on the barrel. Now there's no regular kind of kinyan that's been done. There hasn't been any mashicha. There hasn't been any kinyan chotzer or anything like that. But the fact that they're marked like that is still considered a kinyan. That's according to Rashi. The Ritva brings an explanation from from his Rebbe, the Ra'ah, and from the Ra'ah's brother, Reb Pinchas, that a situmta is like a little coin, like a little token, sort of like the astimon that we learned about in the previous parak, where it means when they're doing when they're doing the sale, whether when they finalize the sale, then he's gonna give him he's gonna give him a little token, a little piece of metal like that, that is going to that there it's going to be that's going to that they want that to affect the kinyan. So then the question is it going to be like kinyan chalifin? So that when the Gemara is going to continue, what it means in what so the Gemara, in what way is it considered a kinyan? The question then is going to be, is it that it's a kinyan chalifin, that's a full fledged kinyan, or is it more that or is it more like a kinyan of money, and therefore it's not, and therefore it's not a full kinyan yet, which is what the next piece of Gemara is going to say. This whole issue of kinyan situmta is very negeya, because there is a lot of discussion, and if we're going to say that it works, if we're going to say it works, how does it work? How does such a thing work? For example, according to Rashi, that we're talking about marking the barrels, there was no method of regular kinyan. How is that supposed to work? So there's a big discussion among the Achronim, where the Nesivos holds it's only Dirabbanan, the Chassam Sofer brings proofs that it's Daraisa, and there's discussion what exactly the mechanism is that it could work. The interesting explanation from Yosef Shalom al-Yashiv that says basically what it means is it's more that once it's marked like that, then everybody else is Masiach Das, everybody else gives up hope of getting it, and therefore that's a reason the Kinyan takes effect. It's very negeya, for example, when we do Mechiras Chometz, when we agree to sell our Chometz to the Rav before Pesach, and then he's going to turn around and sell it to the Goy. So we know many people do it nowadays online. They fill out a web form, and then they do it. Mela, when we go in person to the Rav, we do a Kinyan with the Rav, whatever, and therefore, but how is it? How does it work when we do it online? So it's based on Kinyan Situmta. In general, the poskim say that based on Rashi's explanation, it comes out any method that is generally used in a certain society to constitute a kinyan, even if it's not one of the valid kinyanim, Alpi Torah, is nevertheless valid. When they make these markings on the barrel, it's understood that that's how it is. It means this barrel is sold. And as the Gemara is going to say, it means that in some places it may mean that it only means they've agreed but not gone through with the sale yet, but in other places it means that it's a full-fledged sale, and therefore that's acceptable. In the same way, in any society, whatever method is used to finalize a sale is considered valid Alpi Torah based on that. Again, according to the Chassam Sofer, even Doraisa. And therefore, for example, filling out a web form, which nowadays is accepted in all legal systems as being a valid way of making a purchase, so if we're making a sale, then that works, and that works Alpi Torah as well, and therefore you sell your chometz to the Rav. And there are many other examples of that. Anyway, so the Gemara says, so what does it mean that it's koine, the situmta, alamai hirchza, insofar as what? Rav Chaviva amala mikni yamamash. Rav Chaviva says it means to actually be koine. Once the situmta is done, once the marking on the barrel is done, according to Rashi, or once the token, that once the unstamped coin has exchanged hands, according to the Ritva, then it means that you have a full-fledged kinyan, and neither of them can go back. Rabbanan Amri, the Chachamim, argue with Rav Chaviva, and they say it's not a full kinyan, l'kabulei ala mishapara. It means only that if either of them wants to back out of the deal, there's going to be mishapara involved, as we learned in the previous perek. The Beis Din is going to, they're going to have an official ceremony in Beis Din, where they're going to tell him that just like Hashem punished the Dirat Mabul and the Dirat Flaga and so on and so forth, then Hashem is going to punish somebody who doesn't keep his word. So the hilchsa, the halacha is, it is only the kabuli ala mishapara, that situmta is only effective insofar as mishapara takes effect. Over asrud in the higul, the mikne mamish, but in places where they have the minhag that the situmta works 100% as a full-fledged kinyan, koni, then it is in fact a full-fledged kinyan, and therefore that's it. It's a full kinyan. So you have the Nesivos arguing that that's what it means. In other words, that given that it's a Tanas Chachamim, or the Chachamim making a Takana, that it's a Kinyan Gomer or not. And the answer is, it depends on different locations. According to the Chassam Sofer, it would actually be Doraisa. The Maskana is that it would actually be Doraisa. Another example they popularly give on this is in the diamond industry. The diamond industry has for a long time been heavily Jewish. So they've developed a custom among them, and apparently even the Goyish diamond dealers do this, that when they've agreed on a deal, they've agreed on a price or whatever, they shake hands and say mazel bracha. That would be an example of kinyan situmta for them. In that area of business, it's accepted that that's a way of finalizing a deal, and therefore we're saying that makes the deal final, and neither one can retract from the deal anymore once that's done. Okay. Getting back to matters of ribis, we said in the Mishnah, we described in the Mishnah you have a case where you want to pay in advance for produce that's going to be delivered later in the season. So we said, suppose you're making a deal with a farmer, for example, who's starting to harvest his grain, so you can arrange with him, for example, and the Mishnah gave a whole bunch of lists, a whole bunch of examples of things that you could make such a contract with based on the current price, and the guy is going to deliver it later, even though maybe the price will go up between now and then, you still fine. You can lock in the price, and it's not a problem of ribis that he's going to give you something which is worth more later, because right now he has it in his possession. To that extent, it's called yesh loy, as we learned in the Mishnah. So we said, for example, you can make a deal with him about a stack of grain, or about a pile of grapes, or a vat of olives that are going to be pressed. Or bowls of clay of a potter, or lime once it was put in the oven. So in all those cases, we said you're allowed to once the produce or the clay or whatever has reached that point, then you're allowed to make such a deal. Well, where I'm going to pay you now at the current price, and you're going to deliver it to me later on, even though the price may have gone up. It protects me, the buyer, against rises in prices. And it helps you, first of all, because you have the money right now, but second of all, because that way you have a guaranteed customer for your whatever it is. So we said, so we described, we had, for example, a farmer was the first one to harvest his grain, and it's fine, he can make such a deal, even though we didn't do Gmar Malacha yet. You're allowed to make a deal with them according to the current price, even if the current price is not stable, it's not Yotza Hashar, because Yesh Loi, because he has it in his possession. So how unready can it be, and that still works? Omer Rav, Mechusav Shtayim Poisek. Rav says if there's still only two stages that have to be left to be done before it's completely ready, then you're allowed to make such a deal. Sholish and imposik, but if you have three stages or more left, then you're not allowed to, because then you have a much more the chidushim amiyuchasim laritva, which remember we said before was different than the chidush haritva. You have the actual chidush haritva that were published some 60 years ago from Ksav Yad, and then you have previously you had chidushim that were attributed to the ritva that were printed for a couple of hundred years before that, where it turns out they're not actually from the ritva. Anyway, the chidushim amiyuchasim laritva points out that it's obviously from some other rishon, we don't know who, that when you have three or more stages, Rav would say there's too much of a chance that something is going to go wrong, and therefore it's not going to end up, coming to fruition, and therefore you can't say yesh lo, you can't say you actually have it in your possession. So only when you have two stages that are left to go, then at that point you can say. Shmuel says no, it doesn't depend on the number of stages. It depends. If you're talking about things that are done by human agency, where a person has to do such and such, then you would be able to make such a deal in advance, even if there's still 100 stages left to go, because it's bidei adam, and therefore fine, you'll go, you have the ability to go and accomplish those things. Bidei Shamayim, but if it's something that requires Hashem's intervention, meaning that something that has to happen naturally, you don't know if that one thing is going to happen. Therefore, Shmuel would say, even if you only have one thing left to go, then you can't, because you don't know, something might go wrong, and that thing is not going to happen. So the Gemara says, Tanan, well, let's go through the cases in our Mishnah and figure out whether they fit better, whether they fit according to Rav's opinion or according to Shmuel's. Posik imayel agodish. We said you can make such an arrangement regarding a stack of grain. Now, before you get from the stack of grain, the stack of grain is going to be right after you've harvested. You put all the grain in one big bundle, in one big pile. But now you have a whole bunch of things that have to be done before it's ready. So v'homa chuser. So it's lacking at this point. In order for it to be ready, you have four things that have to be done. Mishta Bachama, number one, you have to spread it out in the sun to dry. We learned earlier in the Perek, you have new grain versus old, where old grain is better because it's drier. You want the grain to be as dry as possible, so that when you grind it, you're gonna get as much flour out of it as possible, and you're not gonna have too much of it have a water content. So you have to first dry it. You have to first spread it out in the sun. L'mevash, it has to actually dry. Or l'medash, then you have to thresh it. Or midra, and then you have to winnow it, which is the malachas of Zora and the malachas of Shabbos. You have, by the way, a good example of where a Dalet in Aramaic corresponds to a Zayin in Lashon Kodesh, because you have the Shodesh Zora, which means to winnow in Aramaic, comes out as Dora with a Dalet. Anyway, you throw it up in the air and you let the wind blow away the shells and straw and whatever, and then the grain itself, which is heavier, falls down. So you have four things that you need to do. So according to both Rav and Shmuel, how are you allowed to make such a deal in our Mishnah? And the answer is because you're talking going to Shadim Achama the Yavish. You're talking about that. You're talking about at this point when they make the deal, it's already been spread out. It's already dried. So all you need now is two stages. All you need is to thresh it and to winnow it. And according to Rav, that's fine. You only have two. You only have two stages. So therefore, you can make the deal now. It's already considered as it's already considered practically ready. So the Gemara says, "Well, Shmuel d'amar b'dei shemayim afal achas ein posek." Well, according to Shmuel, who says that you can't do that when you have even Shmuel says that as long as there's anything that's b'dei shemayim, you can't make the deal yet, because then you can't say yesh loy, and therefore you have a problem of ribis if later on he's going to deliver him grain which is worth more. Well, v'hamachosam midra d'b'dei shemayim. The question is that one of the stages that we're still lacking at this point is that it has to be winnowed. And that's b'day shemayim, because it means you need to wait for a windy day. And the answer is you don't. Efshe b'naf vasa. If it's not a windy day, you can always use fans. You can always have people will come over with fans. You'll have people over there with fans or sheets or whatever to create a wind to be able to winnow that way. So it's not really considered b'day shemayim. So therefore, according to both Rav and Shmuel, it can work, provided that we don't mean that it's a raw stack of grain where nothing's been done to it yet. You already have it's been dried out and now it's been heaped back up into a stack, and now it's waiting for them to thresh it and to winnow it. At that point, you the business person can come and make an arrangement with the farmer that you're going to sell me the content of the stack of grain. I'm going to pay you now, and you'll deliver it to me later in the season when it's ready, and that's fine. Okay. The next one in the Mishnah was Vala Ovit Shalanovim. We said that you can do the same kind of arrangement as far as a bucket or a pile of grapes, where they're going to be pressed into wine. So again, v'homachoser, it's lacking several stages. Michmar, the first thing is it has to be heated up. You have to leave them there piled together long enough that they heat up, and then that way they soften, and that way that way you're going to get more juice out of them. V'ayulu lebei matzarta, you have to bring them into the pressing area. Lemedash, you have to actually tread on them to extract the juice, or lemingad, and then cause that juice to flow into the pit. The way that wine presses were made in those times, you'd have a top part which was shallower, and you'd put the grapes in it, and you'd tread on them, you'd stomp on them to extract the grape juice, and then you would have below it would be a vat or a hole or whatever, a pit or something like that in the ground where the juice would flow into, and then it would ferment over there. So you have all those stages left. So again, it's four stages according to Rav and Shmuel. According to both Rav and Shmuel, it wouldn't work. The answer is Kidatani Rabchia, the same way as Rabchia teaches in a Braisa that refers to the next part of the Mishnah about the olives, where Rabchia explains that when we say in the Mishnah, when we said Vala Matan Shalzesim about a vat of olives, and Rabchia had explained that it means Ala Koima Shalzesim, it means that after the olives have already been heated up, after they've been in there long enough to be heated and softened. Hochanami, the same thing over here. You can say that in our Mishnah, when it says Ovit Shalanovim, you know, the bucket of grapes, it really means Ala Koima Shalanovim, means they've been in the bucket or in the pile or whatever long enough to be heated and softened. This shodesh chof mem reish means to heat up. Rashi points out, for example, in Parshas Miketz, when Yosef sees Binyamin for the first time in many years, ki nichmeru rachmav. So Rashi explains over there that nichmeru means his emotions were heated up, and that's why he was moved to tears, and he went into a side room and cried over there. And Rashi refers to, for example, you have over here the word koimer means to heat up. So his emotions were heated up and stirred. There's an interesting explanation in the word in Lashon Kodesh for goyish priest, a priest of Avodah Zarah or whatever, is also koimer. And there's an interesting explanation, I think, from Rav Shamshon of Fall Hirsch, is because unlike Yiddishkeit, which is based on, ultimately it's based on emunah, but Yiddishkeit is a very logical religion as well. When we ultimately it's logical that to believe in the Eibishter and then to keep his mitzvahs and so forth. We don't just say we're going to stir your emotions, and therefore you're going to do such and such. There's always the Eibishter always gives us a reason that we should follow him. So therefore, so goyish priests are called koimer, as in all they can do is play on the emotions, in order that you're then just going to be swept along with the tide of emotion, rather than thinking straight about it. Does this really make sense or not? Anyway, so Rav Chiya had said koimer shal anovim, and similarly we can say over here koimer shal zesim. Tosfos actually wonders in that case, why didn't Rav Chiya taka the grapes in our Mishnah come before the olives? If he's going to give an explanation anyway, why didn't he give it on the grapes? So Tosfos says because not everybody does this with grapes. They don't necessarily have to wait for the grapes to be that heated up in the first place. They may do other things to them, but they don't necessarily actually pile them to heat them up. They have other ways of softening them to extract as much juice as possible. Anyway, so therefore, so Hokanami ala koimer shel anovim. So you're talking about over here where the grapes are already heated up. So therefore, all you have is three stages. Well, the question is, well, of course, we tlas. Okay, still missing three stages. And according to Rav, that's not going to work. According to Shmuel, there's no problem. None of the things that we're mentioning are bidei shemayim. All of them are bidei adam. The treading on them and the bringing them into the wine press and the treading and the making the juice flow. All of that is bidei adam. But according to Rav, how is it going to work? And the answer is ba'asrodah, who did zabin, who did nogid. We're talking about a place where the one who buys the wine in advance is the one who's also responsible for making sure that the wine then flows properly from the pressing area into the vat where it's going into the pit where it's going to ferment. So therefore, in other words, so Reuven has paid money to Shimon, the one who grew the grapes. The grapes have already been softened. So now Shimon is going to go and put them in the pressing area and tread on them and press them. And now Reuven, who already paid for it in advance, is going to take over, and he's the one who's going to make sure that it now goes into the pit and ferments over there. So therefore, you only have two stages that were missing that Shimon had to do, and therefore Reuven is allowed to make this deal and prepay for it. The next thing was Balamatan Shalzesim. We said about a vat of olives, same idea. So the question is, we also have several stages that are missing. Vamchosam Michmar, it has to be heated up, where again they're going to be piled up for a while so that they get heated and softened. Vayuli le beidapi, and to bring them into the pressing area. Beidapi literally means the place of the boards, because that's what they would use, heavy boards or heavy beams that they would put on the they would put on the olives to press them. Le meidash, they have to actually be pressed. Ule mingad, and cause the oil to flow again into the pit where it's going to be stored. And the answer is Tony Rav Chiya, Koyma Shal Zesim, because again, Rav Chiya explained that the Matan over here means Koyma Shal Zesim. They've already been heated up, and therefore we're only lacking three stages. Well, Ha'ikatlas, so at that point, you still have three stages. And the answer is Ba'asra, like we said before, Ba'asra, Da'ahu Dezabin, Kwa'ahu Mangid, because we're talking about this, the Mishnah is referring to an area where the one who bought the oil in advance, is the one who's also responsible for making sure that it gets into the pit where it's going to be stored. So therefore, so there's only two stages missing. And according to Rav, that's fine. And again, according to Shmuel, there's no problem in the first place because none of these stages are bidei shemai. Okay, the next thing in the Mishnah was v'ala beitzim shel yotzer. We said the next thing is you're allowed to make an arrangement in advance about the beitzim shel yotzer, which means a yotzer is a potter, like kihini kachomer v'yada yotzer. The word beitzim actually can have a double meaning. It can mean eggs, which therefore it means like bowls of ready-made clay. It can also mean, Rashi points out, that it can also be the word bitza, which means literally a swamp. So it would mean the clay. It means that the clay has already been mixed and is ready for shaping. So the Gemara says, "Am I?" At this point, on the face of it, you have a lot of stages left. The first thing that's missing is it has to actually be rolled into and made into bowls, because how it's going to be, you want to make kalim out of this clay. So what you do is you decide in advance, I want to make a pot of this size, therefore I need a bowl of clay this size, which now I'm going to shape into that pot. And the same thing with the, depending on the size, you're going to get different size bowls of clay. So you first need to make the first you need to make the proper size bowl. And Rashi also adds, you make a base kibbutz. You want to make a pot, let's say that's 10 inches wide. So you start with a bowl of clay that's 10 inches wide, and then you punch a hole in one side of it, and then you shape it accordingly. So you need all that via bushi. Then you need to dry it. You need to put it into the kiln. Lemisraf, you need to actually bake it in the kiln, or lemeipak, and bring it out. So you're lacking five stages at the point when it's only beitzim shoyotzer. Assuming that beitza means that it hasn't even been shaped into balls yet. It's still in the form of raw clay. So the answer is okay. The malach for the abishu. You're talking about they've already been shaped into balls with the hole punched in it, and you already have. They've been dried. So now you have three stages left. Well, the ha'ikatlas. At that point, you have three stages left. And the answer is ba'asradah who dizabin who demapik. Similar to what we said before, we're talking about in a place where the one who bought them is the one who's going to take them as the one who's going to be responsible for taking them out of the oven. So therefore, there's only two stages that have to be done by the other guy. So we're talking about, again, in other words, so I bought from you in advance. You're a potter. You have the supply of clay from which you're going to make pots. I'm buying the pots from you in advance. So therefore, we're talking about that I'm buying in advance at a point where there's only two stages that you have to do, that you have left to do, namely to put them into the kiln and to fire them. And then at that point, I'm going to take over and I'm going to take them out of the kiln and then take them from there. Okay. What about the last one in the Mishnah was Valasid Mishishak Enuba Kivshan? We said you can also prepay for lime once it was put into the kiln. So the process of making lime involves you take limestones and you burn them in a kiln where you need to fire up the kiln with wood, and then you burn the stones in them, and at the end Rashi describes the process is when you're done, you have a bunch of burnt stones. Then what you do is you put them in water, and then the limestone reacts with the water and it becomes a powder, and that powder is the lime, that's the sid ultimately, then that's the lime that you use then for plaster or mortar or whatever. So the Gemara says, once you put the limestones into the kiln, you're lacking a few steps yet. Mikla, you have to burn them, ba'apuki, and take them out, or medak, and then put them into the water to create the powder. So you have three stages missing. The answer is, again, ba'asudah, who dizabin, who died. Because we're talking about that the arrangement is, if I've bought the lime from you in advance, I'm going to be the one who does that last stage and puts the burnt limestone into water for it to react and create that powder. So therefore, as soon as you put them in the oven, there's only two stages left. You have to fire up the oven and you have to fire up the oven and you have to take it out from there, and everything else and whatever else is I'm going to do. And therefore there's only two stages, and therefore I can make this deal and pay you in advance for it. And you're going to give me it later, even though later on it's worth more. So the Gemara says, for the Shmuel de Oma b'dei Odom afilu me'a posek. Reb Shmuel had said before that when everything is b'dei Odom, then it doesn't matter how many stages there are left. Even if there are 100 stages left, it would still be allowed to do. So according to Shmuel, Lomali Mishishak Enu Bakivshan. According to Shmuel, why does the limestone have to have been placed in the oven? Even at an earlier stage, that's also Bidei Odom. So even before you put it in the kiln already, you should be able to make the deal. Everything else from that point, once you have the limestone ready to go and the wood ready to go to fire up the oven, everything else from there is Bidei Odom. So even if, according to Shmuel, you haven't even put the wood in the oven yet and started the fire, you haven't even put the stones in yet, you haven't done any of that, according to Shmuel, that should be fine, because everything else from here is Bidei Odom. And the answer is, you're right. Emor, according to Shmuel, you have to say, it doesn't mean that you actually put it in the oven, in the kiln. Misharoi l'shaka b'kivshan means from the point when it's ready to be put into the oven. You already have the wood, you already have the stones, you have all the materials you need. Now you have to go and do everything. So at this point, everything is biyadai. And according to Shmuel, that would be fine. At that point, you can start. At that point, you can prepay for it. And it would be mutter, and there's no issue of ribis that he's giving you a lard, that he's giving you something worth more, that is something that's worth more bidei adam, that's something that's worth more because you prepaid it. With the other ones in the Mishnah, we had, for example, our goddish stack of grain. That's the first thing, really, the first malacha that's being done bidei adam. Is you harvest it, you put it into a pile. And same thing with each of the other ones. The first stage is really that you're putting them into a pile or whatever. And the Tosfos HaRosh actually adds that you can't say, for example, even according to Shmuel, you can't say, for example, that you should be able to make the deal while the grain is still standing. It's true, according to Shmuel, you could, because after all, the harvesting itself is also done bidei adam. However, Tosfos HaRosh points out that then the Mishnah would have to be very wordy, that it would have to say that it depends whether it's tzrichim l'karka, whether it's completely ripe and ready to be harvested or not. And the Mishnah didn't want to be so lengthy. Tosfos also points out earlier when we talked about the grapes and the olives, Shmuel would argue that to heat them up is called bidei shamayim, because the natural process that you have them in the pile over there and that they get heated up, Shmuel would call that bidei shamayim, and therefore, according to him, you have to have that the grapes or the olives have not only been harvested already, but have actually already been heated up to the point where now they're ready to be pressed. Everything else from there is bidei adam, and according to Shmuel, that's fine. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah of Ala Beitzim Shel Yotzer, one of the ones that we had in the Mishnah, going back a little bit, was the Beitzim Shel Yotzer, was the bowls of clay from a potter, where we said, again, according to Rav, at least it would have to be that they've already been shaped into bowls, and they've already had a hole punched in one end of them to make the basic shape of the keli. And then at that point, we said there's few enough stages left that now you can make the deal. Now, the Gemara says Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, Ein poskim ala beitzim shel yotzer ad sheyet osu. You can't make this deal about the beitzim shel yotzer unless the bowls have already been made. Now, one way of looking at it is that this is similar to the machlokas of Rav and Shmuel that we're going to say. In other words, when we said according to Shmuel, this might be more according to Shmuel. So Shmuel would say, as long as everything is bidei adam, then fine, you can already make the deal, but at least you have to have according to the mayor, you have to have the bowls already made. If it's still just in the form of raw clay, then even Rav Meir would say that not, and Rav Yossi would be saying that sometimes you could even earlier. So one way of looking at it is that this machloikas is on the same grounds as Rav and Shmuel. So according to Rav, we would say according to Rav, it would mean Sheyir Osu would mean that until they're completely made, meaning in other words, the basic shape of the keli has already been made. And according to Shmuel, it would be mutter at an earlier stage. Another way of looking at it is that it's not even a matter of how many malachas we have left. The Maharam Shif, in fact, explains Rav and Shmuel only arguing within Rav Meir's opinion. Rav Yossi would be more lenient than either one of them. But the Braisa continues. Am Rav Yossi b'med varam amurim ba'ofel lavan. When is this talking about when the guy has only the dirt, you can't yet make a deal on it, is where it's offer love on with white clay, which is not very commonly found. So when they gather it together, they already have to make it into bowls, and only then are they going to start making deals on it. Avobush, offer shocher, but when you're talking about black or dark earth, which is much more commonly found, could go in Fachananya Vachabrisel, for example, the kind of dark clay that they use to make kalim in the area in Kfar Hananya and the nearby villages, or Kfar Shichin v'chavrei seha, or in Kfar Shichin and the nearby villages. Then Rabbi Yossi says, poskin, you can make a deal in advance, even before they've been made into bowls, because even if one person doesn't have, even if the one you're making the deal with doesn't yet have bowls of clay yet, but it's easy enough for him to get them from other people because such dirt is very common, is very commonly easily available. So again, Tosfos explains that we can be talking about within the Machlokas, given that we had the Machlokas of Rav and Shmuel before, we'd have to be talking about that they were already made into bowls. So Tosfos explains, in other words, the point of the Machlokas is, so one way of looking at it is there may be already an established market price for the bowls, even before the clay has been made into actual kalim. And the point is that it's enough to say that there's an established price for bowls that are still raw bowls of clay, and therefore you're allowed to make a deal on that, even though later on the pots that are made from them are going to be worth more. Tosfos also says, because people have a lot of bowls of clay, and therefore they'll commonly borrow or buy from one another, so it can be considered yeshlai. So again, one way of looking at it is that both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir are talking about where the bowls are already made, and therefore according to Rav, that's far enough along that now we can be posik, we can make the deal on it. And another way of looking at it is that Rav and Shmuel were only arguing within Rabbi Meir's opinion, but Rabbi Yossi is saying they don't bechlal even have to be shaped into bowls. It's enough just that he has the dirt already available. Or even with the offer lovin, all he has to do is have the dirt available, and with offer shocker, he doesn't even need that because it's easy to get a supply of that. So the Gemara says, Amema Yohib Zuzi Mikima Aila Afra. Amema would pay money to the potters where they're making kalim out of this dark earth as soon as they gather the dirt together, even though they didn't make them into bowls yet. So the Gemara says, Kaman Kedameir. Who is he going? Like, he could a mayor, if he's following a mayor, even a mayor says, Ha'oma Adshi also can't. A mayor would say, you can't make the deal in advance until they're made into bowls, because otherwise you have the problem that he's giving you something a lot more valuable for the fact that you prepaid him and you have ribs. And if you're going to tell me that a mayor holds like a Yossi, Ha'oma Afapisha in Laze Yesh Laze. Didn't Rabbi Yossi say that it doesn't even matter if he has the dirt gathered together, because it's easy enough to get this kind of dirt anywhere? So why is Amema waiting until the guy has the dirt and then making the deal with him? It seems like, according to the mayor, it's too early to do it, and according to Rabbi Yossi, you didn't have to wait that long. The answer is La'olam k'Rabbi Yossi. In fact, Amema does hold like Rabbi Yossi, but the difference is ba'asri da Amema oshik afra. In Amema's area, there was a shortage of this kind of dirt that you could make clay from. So again, one way of looking at it is that then Rabbi Yossi had drawn a distinction between white dirt and black dirt, where he said the white is less common, and therefore you have to wait until you actually have it in your possession, whereas the black dirt not. So one way of looking at it is that in Amema's place, because even the black dirt was in short supply, therefore it has the din of the white dirt in Rabbi Yossi's area. So he needs to wait until the guy gathers the dirt together, and he does that, he doesn't want the guy to change his mind and go back on the deal. In terms of actually paying him, yeah, he'd have to wait until they're made into bowls, but actually what he's doing is that he's doing an advance now when they're dirt, of how much they're going to be worth as bowls rather than how much they're going to be worth as finished pots. Finished pots would be no good because there's too many stages left. But here he's doing according to how much they're going to be worth when they're made into bowls. So that's one way. Another way of looking at it is it was another way of looking at it. So in general, you have two ways of explaining this whole sugya over here. This part of the sugya. You have the Rivosh, a late Rishon, and you have the Maharam Shif, an Achra. So the Rivosh is the one who said, for example, that Rav and Shmuel would be that Rav and Shmuel's argument is basically on the same grounds as Reb Meir and Reb Yossi, when he has no dirt at all, even Shmuel would agree that you can't make the deal yet. So according to Rav, it would be enough that you have, according to Rav, they have to be made into bowls, and that would be what Reb Meir and Reb Yossi are arguing on. And then according to Shmuel, it would be fine even if they weren't made into bowls, as long as he has the dirt. Then you have the Maharam Shif's way of understanding it, which is in fact that they're arguing only within Reb Meir's opinion. So now that affects also this part of the Gemara over here. Are we saying when we say Oshik Afra, do we mean there was such a shortage of black dirt for clay in Amema's area that therefore it hasn't been with what Reb Yossi says as far as white dirt, and therefore he could only make the arrangement once the guy has the white dirt in his possession? Or the Maharam Shif's way of understanding it is that in Amema's area, black dirt was more common than white dirt in Reb Yossi's area, but it wasn't quite as common as one wasn't quite as common as black dirt, and therefore that and therefore he had to wait until they actually have it in their possession. And then once he has it in his possession, then already even Rav would agree that it's fine to make the deal at this point, because then at this point, there aren't that many stages left until it becomes a finished pot. So once they bring the dirt into their possession, samchadaite, then each one has a smichus das, each one has a more of a mental guarantee that the other one is not going to back out of the deal. So then the yoiv lahu zuzi at that point, Amema could pay them. Because at that point, we know there's going to be Misha Para, and neither one wants that, and therefore Amema feels safe enough to give them the money. If not, then he has no smichus das yet, because they might not find the dirt, and he's only and therefore Sam Amema didn't want to give them money until he knows the other guy is going to have the dirt. So there wouldn't be Misha Para at that point, because neither one is certain that the deal is even going to go through. Okay. And we said in the Mishnah, we said that another case is you can make an arrangement of prepaying where you're going to prepay for the fertilizer that's going to be produced for the whole year. So we had three statements in the Mishnah. We had you can make an arrangement like that. Reb Yossi said no, only if you actually have fertilizer in your garbage pile. And then we said b'chacham matirin, and the chacham say it's mutter. So the question is, Chacham Hainu Tanakama. It sounds like Chacham are saying exactly the same thing as the Tanakama, because they're both saying that you could do it any time during the year. Amar Rava, it's not. You must have Shomim. It could be Nayu. The argument between them would be about the winter time. The Tanakama says you can do it any time during the year. Reb Yossi is saying any time during the year. So according to the Tanakama, it doesn't matter whether you have fertilizer available right now. You would be able to do it any time during the year, because it's going to be easily available soon enough. Reb Yossi is saying anytime you have to actually have it in your possession right now. Meanwhile, the Chachamim at the third opinion in the Mishnah, they're saying only during the summertime, because Rashi points out during the summertime, it's not just a matter, you can't just use the raw animal waste as fertilizer. It has to first rot, it has to be trampled, and you do that during the wintertime, then it becomes useful fertilizer. So therefore, the Chachamim at the end of the Mishnah are going to say, during the summertime, sure, then you already have fertilizer from the animal droppings that were produced during the winter, and now throughout the winter have rotted and been trampled on or whatever, and now you have useful fertilizer. But during the winter time, they would say that not, because not yet ready. So therefore, you have three opinions in the Mishnah. According to the Tanakama, you could do it any time during the year, according whether you have it available or not. According to the Yossi, only when you have it available. And according to the Chachamim, according to the third opinion, only during the summertime. So the 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 um The Shita B'Kobretzus actually brings from the Raivad an explanation the other way around, that the Chachamim at the end of the Mishnah would say that it's fine any time during the year, because any time during the year you have, because any time during the year is the time when it's being brought out and then to be trampled, and it's very easily available, whereas the summer less so, because people don't bring it out at that time, because it's not going to get it's not going to spoil, and it's not going to get trampled on and get trampled into the mud or whatever that easily. So according to him, it's also a difference between summer and winter, but the difference is the other way around. Okay, now the Mishnah had continued posikim kashar hagavoya, that you can make the deal that we're saying I'm prepaying you for whatever it is that I'm buying. So we said that you can make an arrangement that also if the price, so I'm protecting myself against a rise in prices, that you're going to give it to me even though it's worth later. You can also make the deal to shar hagavoya, that if the prices go down and you can buy more per dollar, then you're going to give me the larger amount. So in other words, we're saying, for example, I'm paying you in advance $10 a bushel. You're going to provide me the grain or whatever it is later in the season, even if it goes up and it's worth $12 a bushel. You're still going to give me the same number of bushels. But on the other hand, if it goes down and it's worth $8 a bushel, then you're going to give me the larger amount, the amount that my money that I'm giving you now would buy then. So the Gemara tells a case in this connection. There was a man who gave money for a nedunya for his father-in-law. So nedunya is a dowry. It means, in other words, there's going to be jewelry and other things like that, jewelry, cosmetics, or whatever for girls. So he gave his father-in-law money. Or rather, not his father-in-law. He gave money to people who are selling such things, where he gave them in advance, where he's telling them, "I want you to have this jewelry or cosmetics or whatever ready for my father-in-law to get from you by such and such a date." So there was no meshicha, there was no anything, but the money had already changed hands. By the time it came time for them to give it, the value of these things had gone down. So now the father-in-law wants to, so now the son-in-law, who's acting as a shliach on behalf of his father-in-law, wants to back out of the deal. Why should I have to pay more for this jewelry when now I can buy the same jewelry someplace else cheaper? Also, a kamei de papa. So they came to the papa, Omale, and the papa tells him, "E paskas ime kashara gavaya." If to begin with you arranged with him that if the price goes down, he's going to supply you with more, like we said in the Mishnah, shakuk kashta. Then sure, you're entitled to get it according to the cheaper price now, and therefore, so you've prepaid, let's say, $1,000, and you would have been entitled for that. For 10 pieces of jewelry at the price then. Now the price has gone down, then you're entitled to 12 pieces of jewelry. The Eloi, but if not, Rapapa tells him, if you didn't make that deal in advance, Shoko Kimi Ikra, then you're gonna have to take them at the original price. You can't make him give you more. So the Chachamim say to Rapapa, why is that psaked invalid? The Ilay Posak, even if they didn't make such a deal to begin with, even if they didn't make the deal in advance, what are you telling me he has to take it according to the original price, and he can't change his mind and say, I'm going to go buy someplace else? Most knew at this point, only money has changed hands, or most like Konuan. We're talking about Talpulin over here. Money does not affect a Kenyan. We're not talking where it was like an Omar Aleph Kenyan Situmta or something like that. So no Kenyan has been done. So he should be able to change his mind. Amulahu, said a papa, says, you're right. I know Nami, Kabuli Ala Mishapara. I don't mean he can't change his mind at all, but if he changes his mind, he's gonna have to accept Mishapara, because we're talking about that a deal was made and money changed hands, and at that point Mishapara kicks in, as we learned in the previous pattern. So what I'm saying is, so if to begin with they had made the deal that he's going to be able to take advantage of a reduction in prices, so now the moicher wants to back out of that. On the contrary, then it's the moicher who's changing his mind and saying, I don't want to honor that part of the deal. I want to give you the jewelry only at the original price. Therefore, the moicher is going to be the one who's going to have to accept the mishapara. Eli Posek, but if they didn't make that deal to begin with, Lekeach Udekardebe, then it comes out it's Lekeach, the son-in-law who's changing his mind, Mekabla Lekeach Mishaparda, and therefore it would be Lekeach listed, who's going to have to accept Mishaparda if he wants to change his mind. So the Papa is saying, you're right, either way, it's true. Because of the change in prices, they could, one or the other of them could change their mind, but which one is going to have to accept Mishaparda is going to depend whether they made that deal in advance. Omale Ravina Lara Papa. So Ravina points out to the Papa, though, there's another consideration. We learned about this matter of Mishaparda at the beginning of the previous parak. So we had like this. We had the Tanakama over there saying, we have the Chachamim over there saying that whichever one changes their mind is going to have to accept Mishaparda. Then we said, Rav Shimon Omer, Kol Sha Kesef B'Yodei, Yodei Al Elyon. We said in the Mishnah that Rav Shimon had said, whoever has the money in his hand, which is to say the Mocher, who at this point has the money and the goods still in his possession, Yodei Al Elyon, he has the upper hand and he could change his mind, but the Lekeach cannot. So in short, we said, in other words, according to Rav Shimon, the fact that he gave him the money already affects the kinyan, and therefore, so we learned there. We said according to Rabbi Yochanan, and anyway, minat Torah money affects a kinyan, and only midrabbanan do we require mashiach. So Rav Shimon holds with that opinion. We said Resh Lakish, who disagrees and says that Mashiach is Daraisa, would necessarily be only according to the Chachamim, but we said Rav Shimon's opinion, Rav Yochanan understands it to mean that Minat Torah, money affects the Kinyan, and only Midrabbanan they changed it and said that you need Mashiach. So one way of looking at it is, in other words, when the Chachamim are replacing Moros with Mashiach, the according to Rav Shimon, they're only doing it as a one-sided thing. They're only doing it that if the Moicher wants to change his mind at that point, then he still is able to, but he has to accept Mishaparda. But the Lekeach would not be able to, because from his point of view, the Kinyan has already been accomplished al pi Torah. And we said over there, the reason is because the whole reason, according to Rabbi Yochanan, why the Chachamim put Mashiach instead of money is because Shemi Yomer Lo Nisrfu Chitecha Ba'aliyah, he might tell him your wheat was burnt in my storehouse, and in other words, I had no incentive to save it because not mine anymore. And Rabbi Shimon therefore holds that it's enough to make that therefore that the Lekeach can't change his mind. You don't need for that purpose to also make it that the Mocher can't change his mind. Anyway. So Ravina asked Rav Papa, "Umi mai did Rabbanon who depligi alei did Rav Shimon?" Now, when we say over here in our Mishnah, when we have the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are saying in our Mishnah, the Tanakama is saying that posikim b'kashara gavoya, that you can make a deal with him that you're going to give me, that you're going to supply me at the lower price later on if prices go down. And Rabbi Yehuda had said, even if he didn't arrange Kishara Gabaya, he could say, listen, either give me the amount that it's worth now or give me back my money. So how do we know, says Ravina, that the Tanakama of our Mishnah is Rabbanon who depligi alei de Rav Shimon, is necessarily the opinion of the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Shimon, that I'm remorse like Konu Klal, and they say that money is not Kona at all. And either one can back out of the deal and have to accept Mishaparda. But afilu hochi, and even so, the Tanakama is going to say, e posik kishara gavoya shokur kudahashda. If they made a deal to begin with that he's going to give him later on at a cheaper price, if prices go down, then he's going to be entitled to get according to the current price, according to the new lower price. Ele posik shokur kudamin ikra, and if not, then he's going to have to take it at the original price. And if not, and if he wants to back out, he's going to have to accept Mishaparda. That's what you, the Papa, are saying. That if they had made such a deal, then good. Then the son-in-law is entitled on as his father-in-law's shliach to back out of the deal and to say, if you don't give me the jewelry at the current cheaper price, then I'm going to go find something. Then I want my money back and I'll go find somebody else to buy it from at the cheaper price. And you're saying that if they hadn't made that deal in the first place, that he's going to be entitled to the lower price and he's going to have to accept Mishaparda. That would be if the Chachamim of our Mishnah are the same as the Chachamim who argue with Rav Shimon in the previous parak. But how do you know? He says, Dilma Rav Shimon. Maybe the Tanakama of On Mishnah is in fact Rav Shimon, Drama Mois Koinus, who says that money minatora is enough to make a Kenyan. And as far as the Lakeach, it still remains that way, and the Lakeach can't back out of the deal. So we should say then in our Mishnah, the key posa, Kishara Gavaya, so only if he made the deal that he's going to be entitled to the new lower price later on, only then can he get according to the current price. Ilek posa, Kshokul Kumeikra, but if not, he's going to have to take it at the original price, Mishum Dekoni Lahuzuzi, because the money has already acquired it for him. Meaning, in other words, if you look at it that way, then the Tanakhama in our Mishnah would say that in fact, if the price that if they hadn't made that deal, if not that he could back out, but he'd have to accept Mishapara, he actually would not be able to back out. But then you'd have a third opinion, Avalul Abbanon, but according to the Chachamim in the previous Perek, Bein Posak, Bein Lai Posak, whether he made that deal that he's going to be entitled to the cheaper price later, whether he made that deal to begin with, Shoko Kihashta, he's going to be entitled to the current price, the Daita De'inish Atara Zila, because people always have in mind, when they prepay for something, they always have in mind that if the price goes down later, they should be entitled to take advantage of that cheaper price. So in short, you should say the halacha would be like Rabbi Yehuda, who would turn holds like the chachamim of the previous perek and holds that mois are not koydus. So then that would make a different din than what you're saying. You're saying, Rav Papa, that it depends whether they made the deal in advance that he's entitled to the cheaper price, and if they didn't make that deal, then he did. If they didn't make that deal and he wants to back out, then he's going to have to accept Mishapara. But it comes out, if we say the way that I'm analyzing it, we have three different opinions over here, then maybe, in fact, you should say he's not required even to accept Mishapara, because it was understood to begin with, like Rabbi Yehuda says in our Mishnah, that a person is always going to want the cheaper price. Now, Tosfos points out an advantage of learning that way would be that way you only have two opinions over here. You have the Rabbanon of the previous Perek agree with Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, and then you have the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Otherwise, you have to say that there were three opinions, the Chachamim in the previous Perek, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and we would rather not say that. And Tosfos explains other reasons as well why it would be better to say that way. So the point is that so then it would come out, says Ravina to Rav Papa, it comes out then the din would be different than what you'd say. Omalei, but Rav Papa says no. Emo de Omer Rav Shimon b'chad tara, because you know when Rav Shimon is talking about that the Lakeach can't change his mind, is where there's only one price involved over here. The price has not changed. B'tshrei tari mi Omer, since when did Rav Shimon say that the same din would apply if the price changed in between? Rav Shimon would presumably agree with the Chachamim then that the Lakeach could also change his mind because of the logic we just said, that a person is always looking out for the cheaper price, and you can't say, in other words, because he prepaid, therefore you should lock him into the higher price, and he can't take advantage of the lower price because Dvar Torah Mois Koinus. Rav Shimon is not necessarily saying that. So that brings us to our Mishnah over here, which says that if the price goes down, then he's entitled to take advantage of it. And after all, Rav Papa continues, "Di'ilai teimahochi." If you're not going to say that, Mishapora b'lekeach le Rav Shimon lesle. Does Rav Shimon never hold that Mishapora applies to the lekeach? Because you're going to say that the lekeach can't change his mind after he paid the money, and that's that. B'chitemahochi nami, and you're going to say that yes, maybe according to Rav Shimon, Mishapora applies only to the seller. No, Bahatanya, when we learned the Braisa before, but Mishapara, we said once we pointed out, once the Braisa had pointed out this din, that they can change their mind, and the Braisa had said, Rav Shimon had said, "At mikol makom kach halacha," it is true that Beis Din can't prevent him from backing out, "Avol amar chachamim Mishapara chola," but the Chachamim established the concept of Mishapara, and mikol my mikol makom, when he says mikol makom, nevertheless, what does he come to include with that phrase? Lav de loshna lakeach loshna mocha makabla le mishapara. Evidently, Rav Shimon means by that that either lakeach or the mocher, there are going to be cases where mishapara applies to them. So we see therefore that Rav Shimon is not saying as a blanket statement that the lakeach, once he paid money, can never change his mind. It means there are going to be cases where he can, and what is that case? Where the price changes. Ella, fika amar Rav Shimon, when Rav Shimon is saying that kol shah mois b'yada yada ala yona, kol shah kesef b'yada yada ala yona, would be b'chad tara, only when there's one price and the price hasn't changed between now and then. Avol, but betray Tari. Like, oh, no, he never said it. When the price changed, then he would agree with the Chachamim. He can change his mind. However, Mishapara is going to apply over there. So therefore, so the Papa is saying that, no, you could very well say that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is in fact like Reb Shimon, and therefore the result would be, like I said, that it really is going to depend on whether they made this deal in advance that he can back out or not. So he could back out. However, there is going to be Mishapara involved. Okay. Actually, this is all according to many Rishonim. Actually, the Ramban, in Milchomis, points out actually that Trei Tari that we're saying over here doesn't mean price going up and down. Rather, he says it means whether you're giving the money now on condition that you're going to get the pay risk only later, and therefore that you're thinking that the price is likely to change, not necessarily that it actually changed. But the Gemara finishes off. Anyway, don't you have? So what are we saying so far? We're saying that according to the Papa, if he wants to back out of the deal, he's going to have to accept Mishapara. But isn't there a different reason anyway that don't you have another consideration anyway? So what do you mean? How does Mishapara apply to a shliach? Now, typically usually means, don't we have a different reason to say the same thing? Tosfos explains over here that the typically really means granted, we haven't schlugged up what Rav Papa said because of Ravina's question. We found a way to reconcile our Mishnah with the previous Mishnah and to say that he is able to back out, even according to Rav Shimon. But there's Mishapara involved. But isn't there a different reason why Rav Papa's din shouldn't apply? Because the shliach shavim ikra. To begin with, the son-in-law is acting as his father-in-law's shliach. And the father-in-law should be able to say, I sent you as my shliach to do things the right way, not to mess things up. So in other words, I'm disavowing you as a shliach. If it comes to a matter of mishapara, then I'm disavowing you as a shliach. So I want to only pay the cheaper price. Why should I have to accept mishapara? I'm not the one who made the deal originally. In other words, it's your fault for the way you made the deal. Why should I have to accept Mishapara? To that extent, you're not my shliach. Omalei, sort of Ashi answers him, because we're not talking about that he was a shliach. The Tagra is Zabin Umazbin. What we're talking about is the son-in-law is a merchant who buys things from one place and sells them to another. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is he had made a deal with the father-in-law had made a deal with his son-in-law, and the son-in-law in turn went and made his own deal with the other people, figuring he's gonna earn a profit on it. So the father-in-law tells him, I want to buy the tachshitim at such and such a price. The son-in-law goes and arranges with other people to buy them at a slightly lower price, and then he's gonna make a profit on it and resell it to his father-in-law at a higher price. So therefore he's not his father-in-law's shliach. Then Rashi says another possibility is that the father-in-law never made any deal with him in the first place. He, on his own, he unilaterally went and made this deal, planning to sell it to his father-in-law and earn a profit. Either way, the point is he wasn't his father's shliach. He wasn't his father-in-law's shliach. So therefore, you're right. The father-in-law is not the one who's on the hook for Mishapara, but the son-in-law is, because he's the one who made this deal in the first place. And so Rav Papa is saying again that if, to begin with, when he made the deal, he was careful enough to say, if the prices go down, then I should have the right to change my mind, then he's able to do that. But if he himself, so if he didn't make that deal, then yes, he also can change his mind because there's no Mashiach yet. However, at that point, Mishapara would apply. So therefore, Papa's psak din comes out to be valid after all. We've deflected Ravina's challenge from the earlier Mishnah, and we've explained why it's true the father-in-law is not on the hook for anything. It's the son-in-law who did the whole deal, and therefore, when we talk about Mishapara, when we talk about any of this, applies to him.